ऐसी मशीन लगाऊंगा, इस साइड से आलू घुसेगा, उस साइड से सोना निकलेगा।
Hi, this is episode 129 of Attention Please with Arnab Ray. We are recording on 20th June 2021 India time. I am Vikram Mohan. If you are listening to this on the 20th, then happy Father's Day. We rock and rule all day long, sweet Susie. And for the 99.9% of people who don't get the reference, don't bother about it. We were off last week though, but Arnab is back and with some rather interesting topics to talk about as usual. So, hey Arnab, happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day to you, Vikram. And happy Father's Day to everyone who is listening. And I don't know if... I think, and I was going to come to that, I think we should replace Father's Day and Mother's Day with Happy Parents Day. Have one.
We and do have one, no?
We have a Happy Parents Day, which is like gender neutral.
No, yeah, in Feb 14th in India is Matru Pitru.
But that is not a real day. That's so that you don't think of Valentine's Day. I'm saying something that, and by doing that, you basically force other people who would normally not have thought about Valentine's Day to definitely think about Valentine's Day, because who wants to think about their parents really?
I even forgot what it was. Matru Pitru something Divas.
Yes. So no, I'm saying that I think the time has come for a gender neutral. And we're going to talk about that, because I think the whole notion of father versus mother, they used to be very distinct responsibilities. And that's kind of over the years, as parenting has become a thing, that's kind of, I don't think it exists anymore. And I think that's a good thing. So I think that the notion of father and mother, and I know that I'm kind of sounding very, very progressive and woke here, but this is something which I sincerely believe in. And that I think, first of all, it's 2 days are too much for this. I think they should be replaced by one parents' day, where you just create one set of cards. But anyways, before we get to that, I just wanted to talk about, did any of you guys see Jon Stewart's rant on Stephen Colbert's show?
I did. I mean, yeah, I did.
That was a bit of amazing television. For those of you who haven't seen it, I strongly ask, encourage you to Google it and see it.
We'll have a link to it also in the show notes.
So what happened was that Stephen Colbert, who is now emerged as, and again, I think there's almost a competition among late night anchors as to who is the most woke. And so he is pretty high on the wokey scale. And I think it's kind of worked to his detriment. I think he was much better before. I think nowadays I think this is kind of a concomitant of the Trump era, is that everybody has been radicalized. So even people who were moderately, like mostly progressive, but sometimes central, the centrifuge effect has swung them to the extreme. And I think this is both a combination of their own evolution in the face of it. That's what radicalism on any side does to you. It makes you more radical. And on one hand, and on the second hand, I think it is the demand of the audience that has moved him. So I honestly don't think that late night comedy shows in the US truly reflect the political opinion of the person who you see in front of the camera. Because ultimately, most of the lines are written by scriptwriters, and I'm pretty sure they go through extensive, multiple vetting before they make it to the screen. So what we see as Stephen Colbert is not actually Stephen Colbert, but a branded, it's been branded by his name, but it's an organization almost. So anyway, I encourage you to see that. So what really happened? So just to summarize, so Stephen Colbert started off the show. And this was the first time they were taping in front of a live audience in, I think he said, 460 days or something. So it was a big occasion. And for that, he brought his old boss, Jon Stewart, as his guest. Now, Jon Stewart, even though he is a liberal and progressive, he and Bill Maher kind of belong to the more centrist, traditional liberal. So
even though they, of course, have...
True liberals, actually.
Yeah, true liberals. So they're much more... I think I'm much more aligned with, let's say, John Stewart or Bill Maher. So they stand true to principles. And they have some principles, whatever house you might want to put those principles. But once they decide on what the principles are, they stand by it consistently. And so what happened, which again, for the woke crowd, that is not the case. And that's what this has been a consistent theme of my podcast, that whether it be the extreme right wing or the extreme left wing or any kind of radical fundamental thought process, the underlying characteristic of it is always hypocrisy. It is always having unequal standards for them and for us. And then, of course, creating a meta structure or meta narrative to justify why there is. So for the religious indoctrinated, it's always the believer and the non-believer. It's in a way simple. For the more progressive wokes, it is linked to often blighted interpretation of history, that is why we are doing it. But to the core, it comes to the same thing, that people are not treated the same. Anyways, so the classical liberal, which is, or the Gunda liberal, as I would like to call them, they are not like that. They try to maintain fidelity to certain principles. I'm not saying that they're 100% successful. I'm pretty sure that you could find examples of hypocrisy in a John Stewart stance or in Bill Maher stance or in my stance. But in general, they consciously make an attempt to stay true to their principles. So again, what happened was that John Stewart came off like guns blazing, like literally guns blazing. He was all over the place. And his main contention was that the COVID virus, what he was trying to say is that he didn't use the word Occam's razor, but that's what he was trying to say, that if we look at the simplest possible reason why this happened, given where it came out, it has to be the Wuhan lab. And so this is really, and I'm pretty sure based on Stephen Colbert's reaction, that he was not expecting this. I'm pretty sure that guests are normally vetted what they're going to say, but this yes. being John Stewart, who... You know, John Stewart used to be Stephen Colbert's boss at one point of time. So I don't think that maybe they went through that level of vetting with him that they would normally go with any other celebrity guest. So they kind of expected him to kind of know the rules, that he wouldn't like basically fly off the handle and start running around the stage, which is exactly what he did. At one point of time, he just like ran into the camera. So and Stephen Colbert just didn't know. You could see from his smile that he just totally lost control of his own show at that point of time. And again, since this was John Stewart, he couldn't say anything. Also, he was trying to pull him back and say, you know, John, there are other hypotheses. And he was like, no, there isn't any. There isn't any reasonable scientific. This is the so he was again. It was an Occam's razor based reasoning. And again, I will also have an issue with what John Stewart was saying, that, you know, it's not as simple as he was making it out to be. If you look at the science, it's not as slam dunk. So there was a lot of overstatement in also what he was saying, but
he was also trying to be funny, right? And you have to
But that's the thing about the show, right? Whenever Stephen Colbert, or any of these guys, they say something provocative, it's always, but I was trying to be funny, right? That's always their escape clause. That as John Stewart once very famously put it, that if you are getting your news and your opinion from a comedy show, then you are the problem, not me. So you should go to better places. And if this is how you form your opinion, by the exaggerated rhetoric and going for laughs that, you know, this comic news brings about. And that's true. Most people in the US now get their news from news from either commentary or from comedy. So, of course, they never get what the news is. They don't get the facts. They get the interpretation of facts. And that's what they want. They don't want. They want their facts to be winnowed out for them. So all facts that are not convenient to their worldview, they expect will not be presented to them. And only things that align with their worldview will be presented to them. Their opponents will be demonized or laughed at. And that's the exactly the way that they want to consume their entertainment. So that's, and of course, there's been an industry, multiple industries, which is you know, built, and that happens when there's a market, there will be an industry. And Colbert and his crowd and the Jimmy Kimmels, they all cater to that. Now, this was, again, something which went off script. So what, again, I'll say what Jon Stewart was saying was the importance of it is it's important to be able to say that on television, because what's happened over the last year is that anybody who says that anywhere has been maligned as a conspiracy theorist, you can't even say that hypothesis. And if you say that, then you are essentially being
right.
Racist.
Facebook officially had this thing, right? Policies that if you put the Wuhan lab theory, then you're banned. And they did change that that policy a couple of
weeks ago. Because now, as the evidence seems to be coming up, even Biden and all these people are saying, you know what, we need to consider that. And when Fauci was asked point blank, he said, yeah, we can't rule it out. But about a year or so ago, around the same time, any mention of this was considered to be, you know, pandering to anti-China rhetoric. So again, the way the game works is that any criticism of the Chinese government is conflated with racism against Chinese people. However, this exact same logic does not apply in international media when they criticize Modi and the Indian government. Then they want to make a very clear distinction. Nobody says that criticizing the Modi government means criticizing or, you know, making trouble for Indian Americans. Nobody says that. Nobody says that, you know, saying negative things about a Hindu majoritarian state makes it difficult for Hindus in the US. Nobody makes that connection. So this exactly is my point with respect to being consistent.
I saw
whatever it is you believe.
I saw the video only once, but I distinctly remember that the video is itself in two parts, right? And they cut to a break and then they come back. And in the second part of it, there is a jerky edit out. So if you check out the second half, I really wonder what Jon Stewart said that really needed to be edited out at that point. Just made me curious. But what I wanted to ask you was whether you had a chance to look at Trump's statement where he put out one saying, see, these are the list of things where things which I was saying and I was branded a liar. And now these are things that have been accepted as possibly true. And with the lab.
I don't give a flying F about what Trump says. Okay. There is, even if even a broken clock is right twice, right?
So is he irrelevant now? From a political perspective?
I don't think he's irrelevant. Again, nobody is ruled out in politics, just like in Indian politics. And American politics is kind of approaching Indian politics. I think Trump has brought, if Mamata Banerjee wanted Calcutta to become like London, I think Trump has brought in US close to Indian politics, like, you know, his son-in-law, daughter, all of this. This is like class, you know, this is something which is puzzling and something which these people have never seen in the US. How could somebody install their daughter as this, like, the second most powerful, the son-in-law is the third, the son-in-law is solving all the problems. Why is it only his friends? Why is it only his, you know, his son-in-law's friends? Oh, welcome to the Congress culture. Welcome. You know, what India thinks today, America thinks 60 years later. But the point is, so since US politics is kind of mirroring Indian politics, nobody is ruled out. I wouldn't be surprised if, for instance, in India, if Rahul Gandhi is prime minister one day, even after what he has done for the last 10 years, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, crazier things have happened. So with Trump, I don't think that Trump is irrelevant, but I think where Trump is facing a lot of trouble is Trump has been effectively, his communication channels have been cut. So he started a blog. God, man, blogs don't work. It doesn't work for me. I thought it didn't work for me. It doesn't work for Trump either. So they had to close down the blog because nobody reads blogs anymore, especially Trump's crowd.
Exactly. Least of all Trump supporters.
Man, that's like that's like reading James Joyce to them. So so the problem with Trump is, and that's really been the biggest blow to Trump, has been to cut. So it's effectively what Facebook and Twitter have done to him. That, I think, has kind of put the brakes on a Trump's advance. But can Trump figure out a way to, maybe he can. There have been talks of like Trump's own social network. There have been talks of Trump's own television channel, like kind of not YouTube, because YouTube would ban him, but kind of an alternative video, you know, delivery platform. And again, the problem with any of these things is it's not really the technology which is the problem. I'm absolutely sure that the Republican Party or Trump supporters have more than enough money and technology to create something even better than Twitter or YouTube. It's just that the real strength of Twitter and YouTube isn't the technology, it's the audience that they already have. That's the thing. That's why whether you have a coup or whatever alternatives you have, you are never going to be able to supplant these early players unless they make a major boo-boo. Or you have to do the China way, where you just essentially make it impossible for them to operate. At which point of time, people have to go to an alternative government-controlled social media. That's the other. So you have to have a kind of an authoritarian state like China. The absolute amount of authoritarian state doesn't work in India, or it doesn't work in the US. So, you know, I'm saying that Trump is kind of on his way. I mean, at this point of time, I think he's, I wouldn't say he's irrelevant. That would be a, you know, pretty strong word to say, but I want to, again, elections are way off. I think he'll fight the elections, but I will hold my predictions for now. But coming to this thing, I mean, I also think that, again, in the interests of science, this is a hypothesis. This is one thing that could have happened. And my main thing is, why can't this be discussed? Why cannot we talk about these things? And I've encountered this in multiple places. Why can't we talk about Aurangzeb without being tagged as Islamophobic? Why can't we talk about Tipu Sultan without being tagged Islamophobic? Why is just conjecturing about facts? And this is what cancel culture, this is what the almost inquisition-like mahal created by our progressives and wokes. That is what, this is what has led to it. That ultimately there are things that you just cannot say in this day and age. That the pressure, it's not just, you know, somebody shows up at your house in the night, knocks on your door and takes you away to prison. No. It's the threat of losing your livelihood. It's a threat of losing your job. It's a threat of losing your sponsors. It's a threat of being tagged as a bad person. That's what silences people. So things that what John Stewart was trying to do, I believe he was trying to, given the fact that he's retired. So he knows in a way that there's really nothing they can do to him. He doesn't have a show. They can't pull a sponsor from him.
He's coming to Apple TV though.
He's what?
He's coming to Apple TV later this summer.
I didn't know that he's coming to Apple TV, but as he is right now, he doesn't have any, like, he's executive producer, but he's not the face for anything. Is he coming as in, is he going to be the face on Apple TV, or is he going to be the executive producer or something for Apple TV?
Don't know the details, but I believe he is going to be the anchor.
Okay. So if he's going, I mean, who watches Apple TV, honestly? But again, if John Stewart comes to Apple TV, yeah, people will watch Apple TV because he's definitely a name, and he's extremely, extremely intelligent person. He's a way more intelligent person than most of the other very popular guys, like Jimmy Kimmel, for instance, who's an idiot. And you know, he's basically Kapil Sharma who looks good in a suit. That's all he is. So Stephen Colbert is also an intelligent guy. John Stewart is, of course, at a different level. So I think what John Stewart was trying to do was, John Stewart was trying to, in his own old school centrist liberal way, was trying to say, it's okay to talk about this. It's okay to talk about this without being judged for saying this. And look, I'm coming out and I'm saying this. So it's okay for you. So I think that's really what John Stewart was going with this. Again, as it's, I'll again repeat, it's John Stewart was also overstating the fact. And again, it's a comedy show. I understand there is no room for nuance. I get that. But it's also not a kind of Occam's razor kind of argument. That's also not scientifically true. But the fact is we should not be in a state where scientific theories and hypotheses cannot be discussed without charges of some kind of ism or some kind of phobia, where people are providing data to back. Now, you might attack the data, you might attack the conclusions based on the data, but you cannot attack the intent of the people who are doing that research. And that's exactly what the progressives have been saying as when they were doing the exact same thing. So you cannot, if somebody wants to show that Aurangzeb was an extremely secular person who did absolutely nothing to Hindu temples and backs it up with research, they will say, well, if you don't like my research, well, why don't you produce your own research? Of course, while doing that, they ensure that they have blocked you out of any platforms, so you can't get your work published. So that's trick number one. But what they will say is, but you cannot attack my intent. You cannot dig up my background. You cannot say I'm doing this because of this. No, you can't do that. That's just fascism. You're trying to shut me down. You're trying to shut me down through your troll armies and through your IT cell. But we can do that, of course. It's absolutely fine when we do it. It's terrible when you do it. And that, to me, is the hallmark of extremism of any side. And I condemn extremism from any side, be it the Hindu right, or be it the progressive left, or be it the American right. All right. So moving on to our main topic for today, Father's Day. So tell me something, Vikram, let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. So how are you a more different father than your father? Or are you? Are you the exact same, same kind of fathering that your father did?
I mean, I hope to God I'm different. And I love my dad, but I just, to be blunt, I hope I'm a better father.
Okay. So without the follow-up question.
Well, I mean, I think I need to elaborate here. Obviously, yeah, I mean, like you said, fathers were a little bit more distant. I mean, the gender roles were more defined. And I have two girls. So I do realize that it's a new world and, the usual blah, blah, blah. And I know I'm doing my best to be more involved, to be more, do the non-traditional things and so on.
But what kind of non-traditional things do you do?
Okay, take this for example. I mean, again, I grew up in all boys household. It was me and my brother, whereas now it's like all girls household. So talks about even, for example, female hygiene, if though any let's say sanitary napkin commercial comes, or even the using the word period was off topic in most families. But no, I mean, for example, in my house, we decided that that's going to be a word that's going to be part of the regular vocabulary. So it's okay to say, you know what? So my daughter just came over and spoke something about it the other day. I don't want to go into the details, but I do like the fact that it's something that can be openly discussed. I don't want to sound too woke and all that. This is like walking on eggshells. You say too much and it's you're being a woke person. If you don't, you're being highly regressive. So basically that's it. I'm just trying to be, there are areas where I feel, you know what, maybe my parents should have done it this way. So I'm trying to fill in those gaps.
Okay, that's interesting. For me, well, you're right. So at least the way I look at it, I don't think that our parents even used the word parenting. Parenting wasn't really a thing in those days.
I don't think that people thought on those lines. I've never seen people, you know, using parenting as a, like it happens nowadays, that am I a better parent than you? I'll show it on social media. So I don't think that was really a thing. I mean, I don't think anybody talked about, I mean, I don't think anybody even now talks about it, but I think they definitely show it on social media that, look, I'm a better parent than you are. I spend more quality time with my family and you don't. I mean, I'm not saying that they say you don't, but that's the implied part of it.
That's implied.
Yeah, that's implied. So, you know, being a good parent, or at least appearing to be a good parent, has now become a badge of your success as a human being. And so just like your, you know, just like your car, you know, you're having food at a lobster joint, you being a good parent is now something which is a good thing to be shown off. In at least when I grew up, that was not a thing. You did show up your camera, your, you know, Minolta camera, and the fact that you had a house in Salt Lake. But how good, and of course your child's grades and, you know, whether they were doing in school, but to that extent, it wasn't that, look here, I'm spending so much quality time with my child. You know, that was never a thing. So, yeah, so gender roles, of course. So for me personally, I grew up in my upbringing was very non-conventional because my parents are very non-conventional. So, my father was the more lenient and my mother was the more strict by orders of magnitude. So I grew up basically mortally afraid of my mother. My father, I wasn't very scared of at all. Like whenever something would go wrong, my main thing was how would my mother react to it? I wasn't particularly worried about my father at all, with perhaps some exceptions. So the only place where my father was more strict than my mother, there was just one aspect, and that was with respect to girls. That was where I felt I was going to have a more sympathetic ear from my mother than I would have from my father. You know, affairs of the heart when I was a teenager, I would not, absolutely not talk about this with my dad. With my mother, yes. But everything else, I would absolutely dread having any conversation with my mother. So, as I said, this was not usually the way people in my generation were brought up. So I didn't have the traditional gender roles while growing up. Again, so how am I different? And again, all of us want to be. I don't think people say this enough. I think that, I take parenting seriously, and because I think it's a thing. I mean, when I say that, you know, my parents' generation didn't take parenting as a thing, this is a critique. I'm not saying that that's the way it should be. I'm usually the kind of guy who usually thinks that things were better before and they have become terrible now. But in this case, I would say this is better. This is objectively better because parenting is a thing. It requires thought. You need to learn, and you will get it wrong. You will have to evolve, and there will be times that you know that you have gotten it wrong, that you have done something which you shouldn't have, and you just have to live with it.
One of the arguments I make is, you know, we expect everything to get better over generations, right? As sports persons now are fitter, they are stronger, you know, they make more runs or whatever. Medicine has improved. Everything has, we expect everything to be better. But somehow there is this notion that parenting has been perfected by your generation. Your parents would think that parenting is perfected at their generation, and anything beyond that, it's probably, you know, going wrong.
No, there's always going to be a bias towards, like, I of course think that I'm the best parent that is, of course. But my point was that in general, for instance, I believe that Hindi movies have gotten progressively worse in terms of the entertainment value. There are great Hindi movies I won't say movies, but there's great stuff that is being made in web series. There's that things, they didn't exist before. But
if I objectively compare a Radhe as, let's say, an exemplar of what commercial Hindi movie was with what came out in the 90s, then yes, this is absolutely a much more inferior product. So there's been many things that I feel, music, another thing. I just can't get today's music. I just, like when that rap music came, what was that movie? Apna Time Aayega and all of that.
Right.
I was like, dude, I've seen That's 8 Mile. This is a ripoff of eight Mile. And you've taken something which was built in a different cultural context where that makes sense, what they're doing. That is part of this is, and we will not make a movie about bowel music, for instance, because that's not cool enough. Okay. We have things in Bengal. We had Kobir Lorai, which is when poets used to get up and exactly have a rap back. Okay. We won't show that because that will be uncool for this generation. So we will not look at things that we have or take our things from their own cultural context. No, we will take something from Detroit and supplant it to Mumbai and think, okay, that this is the definition of uber coolness. And it isn't. It's hilariously bad. Okay.
And so anyway, Oscars for validation.
So again, I'm kind of deviating from where I was trying to go. But yeah, things do get worse. And you're right. Things do. I wouldn't say that the cricket game has become just because there are more runs being scored. I don't equate that with the game becoming better. Just because you're scoring more runs doesn't necessarily mean that the game has qualitatively become better. I think the bowlers nowadays are much worse. I don't think they can hold a candle. Not one attack can hold a candle to the Pakistani attack in the 90s or to the Australian attack in the early 2000s. Not one bowling attack. So, you know, when you see batsmen scoring these kinds of runs, you have to realize that, you know, who are they scoring against? Who's the best spinner in the world today? Who's the best seamer in the world today? And please compare that person to the people who used to bowl in the 90s. Is there anybody like Shane Warne or Muralidharan bowling spin today? You think, no, there isn't. So I don't think that's a fair comparison, but you know, that's a good topic for another day. So with respect to fathering and in general parenting, because I don't think that the word fathering and mothering actually has any sense in this day and age where there are, and that's a good thing, there are no more, you know, the father is supposed to behave in this way, the mother is supposed to behave in this way. I think that ultimately it's two people who are collaborating together to bring up a child. So it's a partnership between two people to bring up a child. And the main thing that I believe is part of good parenting rather than good fathering is the ability to distribute your how you want to, because you know there's so many things that you need to do yourself. First of all, there's one thing is that never, and this is again, this runs counter to some advice that I've often received, is even when you're a parent, don't forget that you're an individual yourself. So you have to have time for you to be you. Don't become, because that is not, don't try to become an Aloknath Nirupa Roy kind of archetype, because it works only in movies. If you define your identity as a parent and that's it, and you think that that's what parents do, that you are no longer supposed to have your own identity anymore, you're no longer supposed to have your own dreams because you're a dad or you're a mom, what will ultimately happen is you'll actually become a bad parent also. Because not only will you not be able to become that ideal thing that you will only find in movies, you'll also effectively become a bad parent. So it's very important for every parent to realize that your parenting is, you as a parent is a role that you assume. It is not you, and it is not you at every moment of your waking life. That's one big thing that people have to realize. And if you can't realize that, you'll actually do a terrible job of being a parent. That's point number one. Point number two is distribution of roles and responsibilities. And this is exactly the way the corporate world works also. So in any kind of corporate world, in any kind of corporate interaction with multiple chains of commands, in a distributed matrixed environment, to use the technical words, you need to have a very, very rigidly defined roles and responsibilities. You do this, I do that. You do this, I do that. It doesn't matter who does what in gender neutral parenting, as long as everything is being covered and somebody is doing it and nobody is. Because one of the things with bringing up children is that you don't want to send mixed messages to your kids. So if you have the same person doing the same thing, then of course they're going to have different judgment, and different ways of doing things. And kids are smart enough to realize where they're going to get a good deal, and they will play parents off against each other at that point of time. And that's a very natural thing to do. And I can't say that I haven't done it myself either. So yes, children will do that. So it's very important for you to know, you know, who deals with what. I, for instance, deal with some of the long-term. So I'll give you one thing that I do, and I'll give you some specific examples if this sounds, you know, a little vague. One of the things I do is that normally whenever my daughter does something for which, let's just say, she needs negative feedback, what we usually don't do is we don't have both of us giving the negative feedback at the same time. This was not the case when we were growing up, by the way. So if my wife is, you know, scolding my daughter, I come and I kind of try to diffuse the situation, kind of take her side and say, okay, let's cool down. And my wife does the same thing when I do it. And this is important. This is important because...
Something that you and your wife consciously decided to adopt as an approach?
Yeah, we do that. And sometimes we later said, look, both of us shouldn't have been doing this at the same time, because we don't want her to feel that she has nobody on her side. It is very, very difficult to the child, especially if he's a single child also, that, you know, when you're a single child, there's nobody. And I know that myself, this growing up as a single child, this feeling of isolation. So I don't want her to feel that. And I want her to also know that, yes, that there is always somebody. Again, if something she's done is so like beyond the pale that there is nothing, then of course it will. But that itself is an exception. So that's the thing. I want her to realize that on the very rare days when it's both your mother and your father not on your side, then they have done something which is gone beyond the, you know, the Six Sigma levels. And that's important, because otherwise you will not learn. If everything is treated the same, then how will you know which one is better and which one is worse, which is a small thing and which is a major thing? You can't, right? If everything brings out the exact same reaction. So you need to have a calibrated response. And again, these are things, again, in my days, nobody thought of it. Because ultimately what happens is parents lose their temper. And when they lose their temper, I'm not saying I don't either, but when you lose your temper, you're not thinking of a calibrated response. You're going for the max that you can do at that point of time. And the problem with that is when you keep on doing that, there is no gradation anymore. Everything is the same. Everything is the same at that point.
Let me ask you this then. One of the arguments whenever, you know, there's a, let's say, the discussion on parenting with my friends, is somebody or other would always say, okay, if parenting, let's say, in the previous generation was so bad, somehow some people get defensive, then how come you think you've turned out so well? If you're, you know, why do you feel the need to improve when you are obviously so perfectly brought up?
Well, I would say what I am is in spite of that rather than because of that. And that's my answer to that. For instance, with respect to, you know, capital punishment, we never do that. We've never, ever done that. Ever. I don't think there's any need to. And I think physical capital punishment is terrible.
Yeah,
it's terrible because, you know, hitting a child, besides the other legal ramifications of it in the US, maybe it's not there in India. But once you do that, because you see, what a child learns...
It just escalates each time then.
No, the interactions with you, it's not that the child learns what you're saying. I can tell my daughter 10 times to study. She doesn't listen to that. It's what I do that she remembers. And even today, when I see myself, I see that I have become an identical copy to my dad when it comes to taking decisions. Despite all my life saying, I will not be like my dad, I will not be my like, it's exactly what I am. Because you see, it's not a question of me listening to what he had said,
But my learning model, the way my brain works, has absorbed the exactly the way he used to take decisions. So I take very similar decisions that he does. And I realize that I'm doing exactly what my father would do. Now, this is exactly how kids learn from their parents. It's not what you say, it's what you behave. And if there is physical violence, then the thing that they get is that in any situation where you are have the power, you are in the right to use violence. And this is possibly the worst thing that you can teach your child, because this is a recipe for a large number of problems with interpersonal abuse. Once this becomes a part of you, and once you realize that it's okay. Now, we know that it's not okay to kill someone. Okay, we know that. But many of us who were brought up being beaten as a child, we don't think that it's not okay. We think, yeah, it's not. It's a bad thing. I don't want to do it, but I still do it. No, you have to have that control, that no, nothing physical ever, because it happens once, that line is broken. And these things, and again, we don't learn these consciously. These are all subconscious adaptive learning. And once it goes in, it goes in. It will never come out again. So it's very, very important. So coming to this, you know, more modern parenting, people can take it to an extreme. Nowadays, of course, there are many cases in which I find this very irritating when, you know, parents go to places based on whether the child will like to go to that place. Now, I think that teaches the child, and I don't do that, because I think that it teaches the child that I get to call the shots. And that it's not a question of whether I can do it or not. Yeah, we can do it. But that's just not the way the world is going to work. Another thing that I always try to do, and this is something which I learned from my parents and I appreciate that, is always bring up your child a few levels less than what you can afford. So yeah, I can afford to bring up my daughter at, let's say, two or three higher levels of affluence. She can definitely do that. And I'm pretty sure my parents could have done that to me also. I didn't have to travel by bus all my life. I didn't have to hang from the footboards of bus. I think my parents could have afforded, you know, me to take a cab or something. It's not my parents would have stopped. But no, the fact that I did it, the fact that is kind of, I'm not, and I'm 45 now, I'm not afraid of these things. But there are a lot of things I am afraid of, because I didn't do those when I was growing up. My parents protected me from a lot of things which many other parents did not protect their children from. And I'm afraid of those things. But there are some things which my parents did not protect me from, and I'm not afraid of those things. For instance, I'm not afraid of any kind of intellectual hard work, because my parents didn't protect me from that. And so these things are important. So I don't want my daughter to take as a presumption some of the things. And again, I know that things change. For instance, in my day and age, you know, having an air conditioner was considered to be a luxury. Before that, having a fan was considered to be a luxury. So what does that mean? I will not turn my air conditioner on. No, of course not. Of course, things change, and that's fine. But that's where parenting comes in, that there are some things you realize I can get my daughter, but I won't, because I want her to realize how much that actually costs. Because she needs to understand, if you get everything just because you ask for it, it's the same thing that happens with punishment. You don't understand the effort that goes into it. Again, everything gets treated the same way. And this is just the way human beings are. You cannot blame a 9-year-old, 10-year-old, even a teenager for thinking like this. I would think the same way too. So Parenting is very, very difficult. And again, as I said, it takes thought. So when people say it doesn't take thought, we just do things. It's important for you to give thought. And again, I'm not saying that everything I do is perfect. Most of the things I do is wrong. And that's the thing about parenting. You know, you have to be, you have to accept that you're making it up as you go along. no day is similar to the other day. And remember, your child is also a moving target. So your child is continuously changing. So the strategy which worked a month ago is not going to work today. So you have to understand that your child is smart. Your child is understanding. Your child knows your buttons. Your child knows how much they can push. Your child knows what the dynamics of your marriage is, that, you know, where to apply the pressure. They know that intrinsically without being aware of that. And so you have to understand that that's the way they think, and there's nothing wrong with that. And so you want your child to have that ability to gauge situations, because, you know, when that child then later goes on to work, when they go to work, you know, and that's a person who can they can kind of navigate the politics of an office. It's no different. So you want the person, you want your child to develop those traits. You don't want your child to not have that ability to read a room, to understand what somebody can get away with. So today, maybe I can get away with something. Tomorrow, I see that my dad is not in a particularly good mood, or my mother is not in a particularly good mood, so I will change my behavior. I can see that my daughter does that, and that's good. That means she's watching us. That means she's modifying her behavior. And that she knows that what is okay on Thursday might not be okay on Friday, because it's no good reason except that the people that she's interacting with are having a different kind of day.
So, go on.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Before we wrap up, let me ask you this one, though. If you could think of, let's say, when your daughter was born, can you think of a couple of things which you never thought you would end up doing as a father, which you are doing now? You never thought this job involved this X, Y, Z?
No, there was, straight off the bat, I can't think of anything that I didn't anticipate that I would be doing. Not yet. I mean, again, I never thought about, hey, what are the things that I would have to do? Or I've never encountered a situation where I thought, well, my parents would never have done this for me. Or I can't believe that some parent would do this. No, I've never encountered such a situation. Have you?
No, okay. Not necessarily parents, but things like, this is something which, quote unquote, the dad doesn't have to do, but okay, yeah, here I am doing this.
No, for me, it's not a question.
Counter to your point that the gender roles have been, it's just a parental.
It's just role. Who has the time and who has that's the thing. Gender roles are irrelevant, and especially again, it's again important for your child to see that gender roles are irrelevant. It's not just a question of, you know, your politics or what you believe, because no matter what you may believe, your child is growing up in a very different age.
So I don't know if you remember, there was this lovely commercial of a dad who spends time with his daughter, when she's about to give birth or something. And then he realizes all the work his daughter is doing. And then, he comes home and he buys his wife a washing machine. It's a washing machine commercial. But it did make a very, very valid point that sometimes, especially in families like mine, where, like I said, it was a boy's household. It was me and my brother and my dad and my mom. But now I realize a lot of things which, oh my God, this would have been so inconvenient, or something would have been so, I can't believe I was so dumb, for lack of a better word.
And one thing is that your life, and this is something which parents struggle with and I struggle with, is how much of your life, like for instance, my writing, how much, of course, I can't write as much as I used to before I became a parent. That's fairly obvious. But how much of who you are and what you like to do is you now have to say, no, this hour I have to give to my child. I can't do this. And this is, well, people don't like to discuss this. They like to say that, you know, I enjoy every moment of parenting, but that's not true. Be honest, at least tell yourself, no, I don't enjoy this part of parenting.
Completely
it's not that I don't
agree.
Have to do
Completely
it.
Completely agree. Yes.
There is a duty behind parenting. I have to sit through stuff with my daughter and pretend that I'm enjoying it when I don't. And yes. You shouldn't feel bad for that, because I'm pretty sure my parents did the exact same thing to me.
Yes.
So this is that subterfuge
is a part of being a parent. So this, am I being a bad person that I don't really enjoy this? No, you're not being a bad person. You're basically acting your age. That's all. And that's one thing. And second is there are things that you can, that you both can enjoy. And again, as your child grows older, I'll give you an example. So for instance, I find that my daughter does not enjoy cricket. I've tried watching cricket with her. She doesn't enjoy watching sports at all. She does not enjoy anything which has even a little bit of horror in it or in anything of that sort. The only thing that my daughter and I kind of share a lot is Marvel. So she likes all the Marvel movies and everything. So we focus on that. We focus on that. We do Marvel kind of things together. So, and I enjoy that when I'm doing it, and she enjoys that when we're doing it. So it's not impossible to find areas where both of you together enjoy doing things. So it's not that you always have to pretend that you're not enjoying it, because, you know, children are perceptive also. So they also will figure out pretty soon that you're pretending. So,
I've even seen the converse happening where sometimes I suspect my daughter pretends to enjoy some things which I enjoy just so that she could.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I've seen that with my daughter also, that there's sometimes when I realize that she is, and this is usually when she is. So with my daughter, what happens is that she does not want to go to bed. So once the clock strikes 9:30 at night, then she tries to extend her bedtime minute by minute. So at that point of time, she will start saying things that we know are not true. Like, Boo Boo, I want to do some multiplication problems. Boo Boo, I can we do some programming now? I said, you will never say that before 9:30. It's only after 9:30 p.m. that you want to do all of these other things. Which, why don't you want to do it before? And so there are, of course, many times when, you know, she says she wants to do things which I know she doesn't want to do, but she wants to do it because it will extend her going to bedtime. That's all. So again, as a parent, you have to see through your children's subterfuge. I'm not saying, again, as I know my daughter becomes older, I know that I'll be able to see. I will not be that aware of when she is lying or when she's pretending she's young, because I'm pretty sure my parents also didn't realize when I was lying as I was growing up. And again, I'm perfectly fine with that. And I know we're kind of running out of time, but as my daughter becomes older, one of the things that I want to accept and which parents have trouble accepting is that your child is going to have a world that you are not going to be a part of. And that you should not fight. A lot of parents fight that for a long time, that everything doesn't go through them. And I know that it's going to be tough when she's going to be a teenager, when she's going to have a world of her own that she would not want me to be a part of. And I struggled for a long time separating that world from my parents, from interfering in who is that guy who calls you. And, you know, I remember once, you know, anyways, my dad overheard something. I was talking to a friend of mine, a guy, of course. And then, you know what? So I want to avoid that. I want to make sure that our world stays that I only parent on the things which are very important and give her independence in some other things. And of course, these other things will increase as she grows older. And I know that there is no hard and fast formula. And again, I know I'll fail mostly, but I'm still going to consciously try to make sure that, first of all, that I provide her the best kind of parenting I can, but I also don't stifle her own personality and try to impose my own, because I realized that she is very different from me and my wife, both of us. She's very much her own person, and I want her to say that.
All right. So is that our show for today?
Yes, that's our show for today.
And we hope you enjoyed this rather unconventional episode. No politics, no sports, no movies even. I know I enjoyed this talk coming back after quite a few episodes. If you like this show and this episode, please consider supporting this podcast on Anchor or Patreon. That's patreon.com/greatbong. And that's it. Until next time, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.